From NPR News, this is News in No Time, Ed Gordon. Since Hurricane Katrina hit, there's been much talk about the role poverty played in the fate of the evacuees in the region. The city of New Orleans, for instance, has some of the highest rates of poverty in the country. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, last year, the number of people living below the poverty line in New Orleans was nearly double that of the national average. Joining me to discuss poverty issues in the wake of Katrina, William Rogers, professor of public policy at Rutgers University, and Carl Brasso, director of the Center of Louisiana Studies at the University of Louisiana in Lafayette. I welcome you both. Mr. Brasso, let me start with you and ask you the $64,000 question. You've studied race and culture in that region for many years now. How much do you believe race and culture had to do with the fate of many of the evacuees?
Well, I think there's plenty of blame to go around. I don't think that race was the fundamental issue here.
You thought, and many are suggesting now that they believe social status, class, was the major issue. Would you buy into that?
No, I don't. Mm-hmm. I think that there was plenty of mismanagement, but I don't think that this was the fundamental issue.
How much do you believe the idea that many of the evacuees, because of their inability to move, because of their economics, is something that this country will in fact have to look at? Because we can see New Orleans, quite frankly, as a microcosm of many of the poor that reside within this country.
Well, I think this was something that was projected as a problem in exercises done as recently as 2004. The fact is that Louisiana cities generally do not have terribly good public transportation systems. Mm-hmm. So even in a best-case scenario, it's difficult to move people, to evacuate people, when natural disasters are looming on the horizon.
William Rogers, let me turn to you and ask you about the role of poverty as relates to not only the evacuees, but the ability of people to mobilize, to move, not just logistically, but to ascend the economic and social class ladder here in the United States. Is this country best equipped to do so, to allow these people to move?
Before I answer that, if I could just give my quick thoughts on your mm-hmm. first question.
Sure.
I beg to differ. I think race and class really, really do play a key role here. The historical legacies of segregation, going back even further to slavery, the facts that are very important. History matters. That when you don't provide education, fully fund education to a segment of your population, that manifests itself through generation and generation. And so, you know, it's no fact that it's no surprise that the folks who had the greatest difficulty getting out of harm's way are those who are low income. And here's an example where many of us now talk about what's called the disparate impacts, or maybe I would still maintain that, yeah, racism plays a role, but the fact that that we have these disparate impacts, that a race-neutral storm, Katrina, as the president said, showed no racial boundaries, but the fact that blacks are disproportionately poor, like 34% of blacks in New Orleans are below the poverty line compared to 16%, that poverty means you probably don't have access to transportation, you don't have access to savings and assets, other types of assets to be able to weather the storm, you don't have access to insurance. And so I think race, albeit it runs together, it directly affects and is also indirectly showing its unfortunate impacts.
Now, pick up, if you will, the other part of the question, and that's the idea of this country being equipped to move people, to allow them to ascend the social and economic ladder. There are many who will contend that the real sin hit before Katrina, and that is that we are allowing far too many people to live in abject poverty in a country that is the richest in the history of the world.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, prior to the mid-1990s, we had seen basically two decades of what many economists and social scientists call rising wage inequality. And what that basically means is that, in summary, the rich were getting richer, the poor were getting poorer, that through globalization, through our inability to fully fund education and invest in individuals, through particularly providing training opportunities to build skills with regards to the growth in the IT revolution and the new kinds of skills that that was creating a demand for, that those who didn't have those means to make those investments, or their communities weren't making those investments in them, they saw their wages not stay up with inflation, not stay up with the cost of living. And we saw basically 2 decades of that, and we finally turned that around in the mid-1990s as a combination of the strong economy, the best economy we saw in 30 years, that, unlike this recovery, was generated a great deal many jobs. We had very, very low unemployment that really reached down the skills ladder and brought in young African-American men, young Hispanic men, young minority women. And so we were on the move in terms of making some changes, improvements, and we actually saw those results, those impacts in the data and also in anecdotal evidence. But now, since the last 3 to 4 years, with a variety of choices that we've been making, we've begun to see inequality rise again. And mm-hmm. So, you know, the Hurricane Katrina, it's hitting the two of the poorest states in the nation. Again shows that soft underbelly of the problems that we have, and that we'll really engage seriously, more seriously, and marshal and move forward and solve these problems.
Carl Brosso, let me ask. Go ahead.
Let me address something that was mentioned just now. The inequalities that he mentioned in terms of income levels is not anything new, and the center staff did extensive field work in rural Louisiana in the 1980s in the wake of the oil boom here, and found that poverty was pervasive, with the exception of a couple of nodules in the state that were impacted by the petrochemical industry. And this has been a festering problem in the lower Mississippi Valley for decades, and Congress has basically turned a blind eye to it. This is not anything new. In my home parish, which is one of the 6 poorest counties in the United States, double-digit employment existed here even at the height of the oil boom. So this is nothing new. And
double-digit unemployment, you mean?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
So, as I said, this is not a new phenomenon. It's just a problem that that Congress has basically swept under the rug for decades here.
And Carl Brosso, that was going to be my continuing question to you, and that is, and again, using New Orleans and this region only as a microcosm, when we look across the country at the poor, it seems to me that there are far too many poor people in this country that have resigned themselves to the fact that they are poor. They have been generationally poor. And as you say, it does not seem to me that Congress is going to move to eradicate this issue anytime soon. When you do studies, when you have looked back upon these issues, is there an idea that there is a resignation by people that they were born of this lot and this is what they will remain?
That has certainly been the case in Louisiana, where the industries that have dominated the state's economy and political landscape have basically built their fortunes on the basis of cheap labor. And so as a result, yes, I think that there is a sense of fatalism.
William Rogers, let me ask you, as relates to that, when you take a look at a city like New Orleans, whose individuals who live below the poverty level are almost double that of the national average, is this, again, the sin not the idea that politicians and other leaders have not been able to, or not had the inclination to, keep the light on issues like this? And when you talk about the underpinning of a particular society, do we not have to do a better job in looking at the majority of people in this country versus the slight few that indeed flourish at any time economically?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, and we have to, and I think now is the opportunity for us to do so. It's unfortunate that it takes a disaster for us to deal with or begin to seriously address a phenomenon that's been going on for generations. But the other piece too is there's a potential for a new group of people who are in poverty, and these are what I might call the working poor or even some middle income households, where there's a chunk of people or a segment of the population that they're living from paycheck to paycheck, and they're not by the government standards, they're not in poverty, but they just need this one shock to their income or to their livelihood. And if the government does not step forward, they can be plunged into poverty and potentially start some of the cycles that we've just been talking about.
And it certainly doesn't speak to the idea that there will be hardships on other states, William Rogers, as they take the influx of evacuees.
Yes, that's right. And one of the things I've been doing over the last few days is trying to begin to map out what the influxes might look like. And some sobering evidence. I mean, if you look at Houston, Houston basically has around close to 30,000 people in shelters, and now not all of them are going to stay there because the new FEMA director has said that looking for permanent homes or residence for these people is his priority, so they may get dispersed. But that represents about 1% of Houston's labor force. Houston's economy has been performing about average. It would take, my estimate right now, it would take approximately a year to absorb these displaced individuals who are in shelters.
Certainly a hardship on all. William Rogers of Rutgers University and Carl Brasso of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, I thank you both for joining us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Coming up, Bush and the political heat of Katrina. Also, John Roberts answers questions about Roe v. Wade. All that coming up on our roundtable.